Don't wait. Hear it now. This is where you get the story. Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590 and fan590.com. This is the Showdown. With Showdown Joe on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
Welcome to the Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. For the next hour, we're going to talk mixed martial arts, UFC, Dream, Strikeforce, and everything in between on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590. Joined in studio once again by Tyler the Intern. Tyler, did you miss me the past week or what?
Yeah, it was a little bit emptier around here.
That's what I'm saying. So we had a good time in Vegas. Obviously, not sure if the listeners can hear it in my voice, but I'm a little under the weather. Definitely not 100% tonight, but we're going to make the best of it. So, Tyler, I pre-warned you before we came on the air. You may have to carry this whole show and literally talk for an hour straight, so I hope you're ready for that.
I don't know if I have the radio savvy to go for an hour straight yet, but we'll see how it goes.
The big fight we've all been waiting for, right after the Fedor Emelianenko and Fabricio Werdum fight, we got to see Shane Carwin take on Brock Lesnar at UFC 116. We'll break down that card momentarily. We'll also look ahead to Dream, which goes down tomorrow evening. I believe it starts at 3 o'clock in the morning, Friday time. So make sure, Saturday morning when you think about it. Great, great main event between Tatsuya Kawajiri and Shinya Aoki, a fight that I've been talking about for years. And if you guys could see me in studio right now, I'm smiling ear to ear. I really want to see this bout, and only because I'm, you know, been a huge fan of Kawajiri's for, my goodness, who knows how long.
Slight bias.
I know I shouldn't be biased, but I have just Kawajiri. It goes back to when, you know, guys that I trained with or used to train with, Justin Bruckman and Tonya Carvalho, were starting their careers over in Shudo, and they just came home one day and they're like, dude, watch this guy. And they showed me Kawajiri fights, and man, ever since then, he's just been one of my favorite fighters of all time. We'll also look ahead at a bunch of different news regarding Fedor and Strikeforce, and some craziness that's happening over there. Craziness, I guess you can say, but we'll get into whether or not it's crazy or not. It appears, just like in the whole Brett Rogers scenario, Fedor loses and now he might be getting a title shot versus Alistair Overeem. Before everyone starts freaking out, we will get into that a little bit later on in the show. For now, we'll also look ahead to UFC Live, which will be airing on Rogers Sportsnet exclusively in HD, the only provider in Canada to not only air the network in SD, but also in HD. That'll be Sunday, August 1st. It's going to be a great, great event. You want something to say there?
Yeah, and the thing about HD I discovered, because I wasn't a big proponent, but once you start watching these fights in HD, you can't watch them any other way. I mean, I've been ordering all the pay-per-views, and every single time HD, I can't go back.
I tell people all the time there is a massive difference when you watch a mixed martial arts product in HD versus SD. You need to watch it in HD. It's completely different. Has nothing to do with the blood. Has nothing to do with that type of stuff. It has to do with just the crispness of the picture and being able to see what these guys are doing. And you can really pick up on the fact that one of the things I'm always looking at, again, I'm blessed to be there octagon side to see what's happening, especially with this Brock Lesnar-Shane Carwin fight. You can see when a guy is breathing heavy. You can see where his eyes are moving to. You can't really see that in SD as you can in HD. If a guy starts staring at the clock and there's 3 minutes left in the round, you know, Houston, we got a problem. Let's take a look at this main event between Brock Lesnar and Shane Carwin. And before we get into this whole, you know, rankings conversation, I want to preface it by saying people out there, especially on the internet, take rankings far too seriously. You need to relax out there, folks. There's no perfect system. Whether you have Brock Lesnar as your number one or Fedor Emelianenko still as your number one, it makes no difference what happens in there. They're all subjective. There is a small piece of mathematics that are involved. The rest is all subjective. Don't take it so personal. I mean, people on my Facebook were going absolutely, you know, nuts on each other, to the point I implemented that zero tolerance policy. I mean, if you want to come on and talk about mixed martial arts, whether you do it at sportsnet.ca, whether you do it on the fan590.com, or whether you do it on my site on Facebook, you don't have to sit there and insult other people that have a different opinion than you. Above all, mixed martial arts and UFC is growing at such a fast pace. There's people that are fans of Strikeforce only the UFC. They don't like the UFC. They love Strikeforce. They hate Strikeforce. They love the UFC. There's fans out there that absolutely adore what's happening in Japan, and they can't stand what's happening in North America. Above all, there's brand new fans coming in all the time. So you have to understand that not everyone is going to have the same knowledge as you. You also have to understand, if you're a new fan, you can come on my page and ask me any question that you want. As long as you're now a fan, I'll be more than happy to address anything you have to say. What I can't stand are these clowns out there that come on there, especially onto my Facebook page, and start ripping other fans apart because they think the question that was asked was a silly question. And I felt like saying, where were you when you first started? Didn't you have a question that you thought, you know, was a valid question? Now you look back, you think, oh my goodness, I can't believe I asked that question. Give people the benefit of the doubt. Above all, don't insult other visitors to the site. Don't for a moment insult the fighters, and don't even think about insulting their coaches, because if you do that, especially on my Facebook page, you're gone. Zero tolerance. You're gone. I don't want any of that stuff that we see on other online forums. It's ridiculous. These guys put their life and soul on the line to get into a cage or into a ring, not to have some fanboy who's got access to a keyboard and the internet to rip them apart. Grow up. Get over it. If you got to start insulting somebody because you disagree with their opinion, you know what, buddy? You lost the conversation. You lost the argument. You're immature. I mean, you've seen this so many times, Tyler, in so many different forums. You can't have a conversation. Someone puts up a topic. Four or five posts later, there's someone starts insulting them.
Yeah, the forums are notoriously terrible for it. I mean, like, harkening back to the whole WC pharmacist, I remember putting a post up on a forum of that, and I got torn apart.
Blasted.
Torn apart. And, I mean, it's pretty much the worst thing you can do if you really love this sport. The worst thing you can do is criticize other fans of it, because these people are new to the sport, they're learning, and, you know, just like you said, you know, everyone starts somewhere. Everyone, like, I remember when I first started following MMA and training, and my knowledge was zero. And, you know, over the years, it's a lot higher now. So, you know, if someone, when I first started blasting me for any stupid comment I made, you know, it would turn me off of the sport. It would turn me away from this thing that I now love, and it's so big a part of my life. And so when you want the sport to grow larger, you want areas like New York or Ontario to have it legalized, the worst thing you can do is push people away from public support of it. You can't just go insulting people because you disagree with them or because they ask something that you already know. I mean, that's not how people learn.
Yeah, and above all, to me, it's like, I have no problem when people disagree with my rankings or disagree with my picks or disagree with my analysis of or about. No problem. We can discuss it, we can debate it, and chances are, if you're right, if you've posted something that I'm like, wait a second, I never thought of it that way, you've just changed my mind. But then I start calling, whether it's me or Tyler or someone else, you know, an idiot or a buffoon or this or that, you know what, there's no room for that in the conversation. Talk to me, debate with me, prove to me that I'm wrong. And if I'm wrong, I'll be the first want to say, you know what, good call, buddy, lady, madam, whomever, good call. I agree 100%. I'm looking at this fight in a completely different manner right now. Now, I was hoping some people, I would have taken more of Brock Lesnar's fans, their advice going into this bout, because obviously I missed the boat on the Carwin versus Lesnar fight, but no one could have convinced me otherwise that Carwin was going to lose this fight. I had Carwin winning this fight 100%, and he nearly pulled it off if it wasn't for Josh Rosenthal, who did a great job, believe it or not, refereeing that fight. Again, Tyler, I'm sitting there octagon side, and I literally grabbed Bobby T by the shoulder, grabbed, you know, that part of your knee where people, you know, surprise you sometimes, where they kind of squeeze just above your knee. I was just squeezing, and I was like, oh my goodness, he's going to do it, he's going to do it, I can't believe this, right? And next thing you know, Josh Rosenthal lets it continue onwards. And next thing you know, Carwin, you know, gasses himself out, punched himself out, wasn't breathing properly, you know, suffered from lactic acidosis, I believe it was called?
That's what he's calling it.
The lactic acidosis, couldn't come out in that second round properly. And next thing you know, Lesnar took him down and pulled off the unexpected, pulled off that submission. Now, people are complaining about Josh Rosenthal not stopping the fight. I encourage everybody to watch Monday's episode, or at least next week's episode of MMA Connected, because we broke the fight down and we took a look at what happened with Brock Lesnar on his back. Again, you're never going to see Brock Lesnar be a technical striker. Above all, he told us, all the media told all of us, that going into this fight, he was going to do whatever he could possible to stay away from Shane Carwin's punching power. And at one point, he was just tailing away, running away, calling it turtling, whatever you want. He went down and covered up, and obviously hoping that that Carwin would punch himself out. But in between taking that brutal abuse from Carwin, he was still defending himself. He watched the episode. I'm going to hide it. He used his legs to push Carwin away from his hips. Carwin came back. He started raining down bombs again. And what did Lesnar do? He kind of waited and waited and waited. And when the punches started slowing down, put his left hand onto Carwin's right bicep to prevent that right hand from coming down. Carwin adjusts his position, and then he starts coming down again, and Lesnar again covered up, but then pushed his right hand right into Carwin's face to push him away. Then the power from Carwin started dissipating. It started, the punches started getting weaker and weaker and weaker, and that's when Lesnar was able to escape, reverse position, get the fight back to standing up. Round came to an end. Now, when you first saw that fight, what was going through your mind?
I thought they were
going
to stop it in the first round for sure. When I was watching it live, and this fight grabbed people in a special way. I mean, I had friends standing up on the couch, standing in front of my view to the point where I had to move them out of the way because they were so, like, so invested in the fight, and they wanted Carwin to pull this off so much that they were, you know, on their feet. And I thought they were going to stop it in the first round too, but, you know, a friend of mine discovered that I could rewind.
Yeah, that's right, the PVR.
So he insisted that I go back and we rewatch that fight. And, you know, when I rewatched it, it was a great call by Josh Rosenthal. I mean, Carwin was landing a few really heavy shots on the ground, but not enough consistently that it was like, oh, Brock Lesnar's out or he's in a lot of trouble. Like, he was blocking a lot. A lot of them were glancing blows. A lot of them were hitting, you know, these massive arms of Brock Lesnar. So it was a good call. I mean, it was extremely hard to make live. I'm surprised that he did, because I'm sure there's a ton of referees that would have stopped that fight.
Well, people were asking me, they're like, sure, you know, I'm a certified referee under Big John McCarthy. Would I have stopped that fight? Now, from where I was sitting, probably, yes, I was. But Josh Rosenthal had the best view, better than any camera. He was right there. And what he's looking for is he's looking at whether or not those punches are landing crisply, which they were. But Lesnar's eyes weren't rolling back. Lesnar's eyes weren't shutting. Lesnar didn't appear like he was getting knocked out. He was just getting punched in the face, but they weren't knocking him out. So he kind of warned him once, warned him twice. And that's why Carwin began to pick up the pace with his punches, because he knew he was moments away from having the fight stopped. And unfortunately, it didn't work in his favor because he punched himself out. But Lesnar, yeah, he took a lot of abuse, worst that he's ever taken. That was a 10-8 round, bar none, right? Sean Pearson actually called me and said it was a 10-7 round, but that's Pearson all the time. Pearson's always trying to push that boundary a little bit more.
I don't
regardless,
think we'll ever see a 10-7 in MMA.
Well, according to Pearson, it was 10-7 because that fight should have been stopped. And, you know, Pearson's analogy of 10-9, 10-8, 10-7 is, you know, to the extreme, but that's Sean, and Sean's always going to be that way. At the same time, that fight could have been stopped at any one point in time. So maybe Sean was right or is right. At the same time, Lesnar wasn't getting knocked out. He was taking a beating, but he wasn't getting to the point where he went, you know, where the body goes limp and he can no longer defend himself. He was covering up. Punches were getting through, but not to the point where we saw with Frank Mir, where it was like he wasn't defending at all and just taking a beating from Carwin. So Lesnar did what he had to do. Good on Josh Rosenthal. People may disagree as much as they want. That's why we're having this conversation. But good on Josh Rosenthal for letting that fight go, because eventually Lesnar came back and pulled off the submission.
I think the conversation would be a lot different, too, if Carwin came out in the second round and just demolished Lesnar. Then people would be saying, you know what, maybe he should have finished.
Like Cyborg and Jen Finney.
Right? But, you know, it's obviously the right decision because Lesnar came out and won the fight. I mean, you can't look back and say it was a bad decision because the other guy won, right? But it does, I think it does bring up, you know, a different conversation. If you look back to fights, you know, where Roy Nelson will pin a guy down in a crucifix position and be landing punches, or even Matt Hughes and BJ Penn, where that crucifix position doesn't allow you to get, like, full rotation on your hips, doesn't allow you to put really heavy shots on a guy's head, but he's pinned down, and you're landing consistent blows, but they're not enough to knock a guy out. I think it's going to open up a conversation where people are going to say, you know what, like, if a guy's not knocked out and his eyes aren't rolling back because the shots aren't heavy, but he can't move and he's being consistently hit, where is the line that we draw where this is the line where you have to stop a fight, and this is the line where, you know what, we have to give the guy the benefit of the doubt that he's going to work out of this in another round, or he's going to survive and come back and win. So, I mean, I think it's going to open up that debate, you know, maybe in future fights.
We got 30 seconds before we have to close off this segment here. Is Brock Lesnar now officially your number one fighter in the heavyweight division?
He has to be. I mean, before this fight even happened, we were both saying that this changes MMA going forward. Now the UFC owns every single division except for the 125 division, and every single one of their champions will now be the undisputed ranked number one, and that's the way it should be. If you want to be the man, you have to beat the man. So Dana
sort of
White,
like Verdum beat Fedor. And now he's number two on almost everybody's rankings out there, but because he's on my rankings, I'm the one taking a beating from all the fans.
Yeah, I have Verdum at number two. You know, Fedor at number three, Kane number four.
Ooh, I got Carwin at number. Actually, I've got Carwin at number two.
Really?
More,
okay.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that after the break. My reasoning and more reasons for people to get upset with me. You're listening to The Showdown on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
Don't wait. Don't wait. Hear it now. This is where you get the story. Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590 and fan590.com. This is the Showdown with Showdown Joe on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
Welcome back to the Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe, joined in studio once again by Tyler the Intern. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, Dream, and everything in between, including Strikeforce a little bit later with what's happening with Fedor Emelianenko on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590. So before we went to break, we discussed how I have Shane Carwin at number 2. You have him at number 76, you said?
No, I have Carwin about 6.
Okay, well, you're wrong. Well, here's my reasoning, okay? Based on the performance, and I know Shane Carwin lost the fight. He was submitted. It's his first defeat on his record. I have Lesnar, in the heavyweight division, I have him as number 1. Because, yeah, I think he's the baddest man on the planet right now, because if not just for his size and his ferocity and stuff like that, number 1. I put Carwin number 2 only because this is a guy that nearly defeated the baddest man on the planet and in future might be able to defeat the baddest man on the planet. But because he came so close, I think he's a guy that can beat Fabrizio Verdum. And because he can beat Fabrizio Verdum, and Verdum beat Fedor Emelianenko, that's my top 4. Brock Lesnar number 1, Shane Carwin number 2, Fabrizio Verdum number 3, because he beat the man. And when you beat the man, you become the man. Fedor Emelianenko number 4, and Cain Velasquez at number 5. People out there now have Cain Velasquez at number 2. Personally, I can't justify moving Cain Velasquez from my number 5, which he's been there for a little bit, only because he hasn't fought. He hasn't competed. Even though his last fight was against Nogueira. Yeah, and that's when I put him at number 5. He overtook Mir, Nogueira, and guys of that nature. But he hasn't fought, so I can't, you know, tell Shane Carwin, no, you're dropping all the way down now, and you're below Cain Velasquez right now. No, the fight hasn't happened. Until Cain Velasquez fights, whether it's against Lesnar or not, which it's going to be for sure, that's what Dana White is saying, I can't move Cain Velasquez. Now, Cain Velasquez goes out there and smashes Brock Lesnar, but perhaps even still loses. He might go up to number 2. I don't know. I have to take a look at the performance and the actual result itself. You're saying if Brock would have lost, you would have had him where, at number 5 or 6?
I would have had him drop all the way down to 6.
Wow, talk to me.
Well, the first fight that Brock ever had was in K1 against Big Korean. It was a freak show fight. I can't remember his name. I'll just look it up here.
And Dana White's calling it James Toney versus Randy Couture.
Min-Soo Kim, right?
Yeah, I remember that fight. The mount pounding on top of the guy, mounted him, nailed him, yeah.
Yeah, it was a big freak show fight. So that's Brock's first foray into MMA. And then he lost to Frank Mir. And he's 1-1 in Frank Mir. He's beat Heath Herring. He's beat Randy Couture. But the Couture he beat is like 46 years old. The Heath Herring he beat is, you know, a journeyman heavyweight. And
Good on Heath Herring. He took him the distance.
He did.
And it wasn't an evolved Brock Lesnar, but good for Heath.
Heath Herring is a durable fighter, though. He went the distance with Fedor.
And Heath Herring rocks, by the way.
He's
awesome,
a
dude.
Really good fighter. But his attention has been kind of swayed from fighting, right? And he has a really legit win over Shane Carwin.
Hey, nothing wrong with being a movie star, I might add.
But if Brock Lesnar would have lost to Carwin, he would have been 1-1 with Mir. He would have had, you know, a legit win over Herring and Couture, but you're talking about an old Couture, and he would have had a loss to Carwin if he would have lost. So for me, that doesn't warrant him being in the number 1, 2, 3, 4 spots in the heavyweight division. So I'd have to drop him all the way down to 6. I'm sure there'd be some people who might drop him out of their top 10, but you know, he comes with an aura around him. So some people get lost in the name Brock Lesnar.
Well, the hardcore Fedor fans wouldn't even have him ranked in the top 40.
Yeah. But I mean, like,
and there's only 39 heavyweights in the world.
I mean, I think the reason that Cain Velasquez is ranked so high is because he's beat Nogueira.
And
if you want to build a name in the heavyweight division, it has to be against Rodrigo Nogueira. Fedor built his name off Nogueira, you know? Cain Velasquez now built his name off Nogueira. I mean, he was the kingpin of the heavyweight division before Fedor came around, and that's largely why Fedor is ranked so high. Nog had beaten everyone except Fedor.
Now, Brock Lesnar taking on Cain Velasquez. Can Velasquez pull this off?
I think he can. I think he's a more technical fighter than Lesnar, but he's very undersized. I mean, I think he's about 230 pounds.
244, I think.
240 pounds. And, you know, Lesnar, he's 240 if he's extremely, really sick, you know? I mean,
if he's having diverticulitis
problems
again.
There's no comparison in size, and their background is both wrestling. We've seen with Kane, he's been in trouble against Congo with taking heavy shots. I think it's going to be really dangerous for him to mix it up with someone like Lesnar, who has heavy hands, and, you know, has the same base, He's a lot larger. It's gonna be really hard. But where I think Kane has the advantage is not only in his technical striking, and he may have more of an aggressive shot. He's one of those guys that just keeps going forward. But cardio. If he can take this to the fifth round, Brock's gonna be sucking a lot of wind, and I think that's where Kane can beat a lot of these larger heavyweights like a Carwin or Brock Lesnar. I mean, he definitely doesn't want to stay in there at the first two rounds and mix it up and let them use their size against him. He wants to get these guys in the later rounds because when you're carrying that much muscle, your heart is working extra, your lungs are pumping harder, your body
lactic
just can't
acidosis.
Keep up. Yeah, your body just can't keep up with that size. I mean, it's hard. It's hard carrying that much muscle around. So I think that's where Kane has a really big advantage. He's a notorious gym rat. And I think if he can push the pace and he can bring Lesnar into the later rounds, you know, he could take it.
Here's what I'm thinking with Cain Velasquez, and this is my George St. Pierre / Rashad Evans theory. Take your opponent to where he's the weakest. Where is Brock Lesnar the weakest?
Off his back.
I disagree.
Off his back, I think, is the weakest.
All right. So, but how do you get him onto his back?
You have to mix it up striking with him.
Okay. Here's what I think. Brock Lesnar's weakness is a stand-up.
Mm-hmm, for
it's
sure.
The striking game. Cain Velasquez, they were calling him pillow fists until he knocked Nogueira out. And then you heard, oh, Nogueira's already washed up and blah, blah. No. Cain Velasquez hits like a truck. I've seen it firsthand, and whether it's pad work, mitt work, I've seen it with the Nogueira fight. This guy hits like a truck. He's got footwork. He's got kicks, something Brock Lesnar does not. Now, I'm not advocating throwing kicks against a wrestler. I wouldn't do that. But Cain Velasquez has some pretty good footwork. And I think if he could sit there and avoid Brock Lesnar in the clinch, keep the fight standing up, punch Lesnar in the face as much as possible to get him to that third or fourth round, he could pull off becoming the new UFC heavyweight champion. Now, Josh Thompson is saying otherwise. He's saying that, you know, that Cain Velasquez is training with the best wrestlers in the world right now. He's holding his own. He's getting takedowns. They can't take him down. All that stuff there. Why? Why go where Brock Lesnar is the strongest? Take him to where he's the weakest. Keep the fight standing up. Get the big guy tired and finish him off. For Brock Lesnar, don't change a thing. Improve your striking. Get in there. Put Velasquez on his back. Ground and pound him to another victory.
I think the difficult thing with Lesnar is I think you have to make him afraid on the feet. I mean, when Carwin tagged him, he was running, he was covering. You know, seasoned strikers would change angles. They'd back up on a diagonal. They wouldn't cover and turn.
Work your angles, right?
It's the worst thing to do is cover, turn, not look at the guy you're fighting. So it was obvious that Carwin's power had Lesnar scared. I don't think Kane's going to be able to do that. And if he wants any success, you know, with takedowns or even on the feet, you have to make him scared.
Cain Velasquez's game plan, in my opinion, has to be like an axe on a massive tree. It's not the one, you know, axe that's going to chop the tree down. It's multiple chops. 1, 2, 25, 30, 50, 70. At that point there, that tree is going to come down. Yeah. Slowly but surely, you got 5 rounds, you got 25 minutes. Be patient. Stick to your game plan. If plan A doesn't work, go to plan B. It's wrestling. Let's go. Wrestle this thing out.
And you know what I think Lesnar? I think Lesnar is now realizing that it's all about wrestling. I mean, he's going to use his striking just, you know, enough to get in close and take a guy down.
He's also realized it's a sport now.
Yeah.
Did you watch the post-fight press conference?
No, I didn't see it.
He made it clear. He's like, I made a mistake when I first came into the sport. I brought the pro wrestling mentality here. Now I understand that you've got to be more humble. It's a sport. You've got to respect your opponent. And that's why you saw him in a different demeanor and a different Brock Lesnar this time around. He was very respectful. You know, I mean, here's a guy that mounted Shane Carwin. Now, mind you, he did have the arm triangle on there. You know, when you mount someone, you want to pound them. But this guy wanted that arm triangle, and he got it. You know, thank you, Comprito. Great job teaching Brock Lesnar that submission move. But you saw Lesnar even afterwards. He got up, and he was smiling, you know, pointing to his chin. I could take a punch. Everything was fun. But then in his post-fight interview in the cage with Joe Rogan, he came out and said, you know, I'm blessed to be here. I'm very thankful. By the way, I had a conversation with Paul Heyman, who was Lesnar's manager back in the WWE days. But he's also a very smart guy, very intelligent guy. And he shared with me a bunch of information. A lot of it was off the record. But let's just, we've heard it before, how Lesnar was in deep trouble with his life and his health. It was really bad. Like, it was very, very, very bad to the point where, let's be glad Lesnar is still with us. Let's just put it that way. That's how bad it was. Mm-hmm. Now, Paul Heyman, another topic for another day. You'll be hearing probably from Paul Heyman on the show sooner than later on an MMA angle, not from a wrestling angle, professional wrestling angle. This is a very smart guy that knows his thing. I encourage a lot of people to visit fightopinion.com. An online friend of mine, Zach Arnold, runs the site. He's got an interesting piece. It's actually up at MMATorch.com, what he thinks Paul Heyman is up to. And it's an interesting look. If you get a chance, look it up. Zach Arnold's piece on Paul Heyman at MMATorch.com. It is a sick read. Trust me, Paul Heyman is a genius. Some people call him shrewd. This guy knows what he's doing, and he's got an angle to what he's doing with what's happening with Brock Lesnar. Let's move ahead from this heavyweight thing because it's taking up the majority of the show right now. As we were coming down today to work to Sportsnet and the Fan 590, you recommended that Chris Lieben change his nickname from the Crippler to the American Zombie so we can have American Zombie shirts.
Definitely. I mean, you can see the success of the Korean Zombie t-shirts. I want a Korean Zombie t-shirt. If when you're at the next UFC, if they're selling them, just pick me up one. I'll pay you for it.
I wonder if they actually have them in the UFC booths, because I didn't see one. They'll have it at the WEC booths, but if they have it at the UFC booth, I'll pick one up for
you. I want one of those shirts. And, I mean, I think Lieben should get right on board with that. I mean, he was walking forward like a zombie in that fight.
What's wrong with this guy?
I don't know. I mean, it was shades of his Terry Martin knockout, right?
He is just nuts.
He gets tagged, and he keeps going forward. And he just outlasts guys.
And the one thing I like about Chris Lieben is he won the fight, but he was humble afterwards, because I was the guy that was sort of taking it to him at the pre-fight workouts on Wednesday, saying, you're not really respecting Akiyama's judo. He's like, you know what? I got an answer for judo. It's my left fist. He's like, they wear gis. And I was kind of like, dude, this is MMA. You know he's translating his judo skills to no gi sort of thing. And Lieben afterwards said, man, that guy's, I completely missed the boat on his judo. He was tossing and throwing me around like a ragdoll sort of thing. He respects judo right now because, I mean, Justin Bruckman was the guy that taught me a lot of my judo with the gi and without the gi, and some of the stuff that he could pull off was ridiculous. Carl Parisian, we see it with Akiyama, but like I said, Akiyama's fight to lose. He lost the fight. He was toast when Lieben put on that triangle. I mean, Lieben said it himself. He wouldn't stop my legs from climbing up his back. I put his arm through my legs, triangle choke, thanks for calling.
He even had a pretty tight armbar as well, so I mean, it was almost like Akiyama wasn't afraid of Lieben's guard, but you're talking about a guy who's been training, you know, all around MMA game for a while, and you could really see the difference in Lieben's attitude from his early days to now. I mean, he's cleaned up his act a lot, he's eating healthy.
Well, I think the running joke was hilarious with Dana White and Chris Lieben saying, I'm glad these guys called me because I wasn't able to get myself in trouble. Yeah. I had to get back into the gym. But now he's going to get a well-deserved break having, you know, victories in two straight weeks. Technically it's 3 weeks when you think about it. But, you know, two wins, 2 weeks, you know, it's like a modern-day UFC record. But now he's going to have time off. Hopefully, you know, we were joking around saying, what if Chael Sonnen pulls out of the fight with Anderson Silva? Are you ready to fight? You would have probably said yes.
That would be amazing. I don't think he'd be ready, though. I mean, there was a difference between the first fight and the Akiyama fight. I mean, when he fought Akiyama, it was three rounds, and they were both beating the hell out of each other. So
yeah,
I don't know if his body would be able to heal that quickly. But
he needs a break.
He'd probably still take it. I mean, it's a fight for the championship, right?
Let's go through the rest of the card very, very quickly here. Chris Lytle and Matt Brown. I thought it was funny, Chris Lytle at the post-fight press conference saying how he has no ground game. Mental note to Chris Lytle. You're a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. You've got a great ground game.
I think he was just poking fun at everybody. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about a guy I've always said has an underrated ground game.
Yep.
I mean, if you watch his fight with Matt Hughes, even though Matt Hughes is mauling him on the ground, he was able to keep his guard in really tight spots, and he always has dangerous submissions. I mean, there's fights where Lytle's going in and he's slugged it out with a dude. I know for a fact that he should take this guy to the ground because he's really strong down there and the other guy's really weak.
All right. In the next segment, we're going to have more of a rapid-fire session. We're going to go through a whole whack of stuff from UFC 116. We'll look ahead to Dream 15. We'll talk about the craziness, or sort of semi-craziness, that might make sense, a method to their madness with Strikeforce. Much more mixed martial arts right here on The Showdown on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
Way more than just the score. Sports Insight on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590 and fan590.com. This is the showdown with Showdown Joe on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
Welcome back to The Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, Dream, Strikeforce, and everything in between on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590. Special guest in studio once again is Tyler the Intern, giving a different analysis on some of the stuff that we're talking about. So we've gone through the results from UFC 116 with the main event, Lesnar taking out Carwin, Lieben taking out Akiyama in the co-main event, and then that incredible fight between Chris Lytle submitting Matt Brown with a straight armbar. Stefan Bonner and Christoph Szczesny, the rematch from UFC 110. It went 2 rounds, 3 minutes and 8 seconds when Stefan Bonner finally finished off the Canadian Christoph Szczesny. What an absolute crazy battle.
Yeah, and they definitely have to match these guys up again.
Dana said they won't.
They need a rubber match on this. I mean, these guys are putting on exciting fights every time they get in there. I mean, maybe Bonner is, you know, one of Dana's, I guess, special fighters.
Yeah, he'll always have a home in the UFC.
But I think they were going to really run into a problem if he lost this fight. I mean, it would have been, was it 4 in a row?
Yeah, he would have been in big trouble.
It would have been 4 fights in a row that he's lost. I mean, you'd really have a hard time justifying keeping him in there.
He'd have some position with the company some way, somehow, whether it's PR. But, you know, in terms of fighting.
As a fighter.
Yeah, done.
Bonner would, you know, fighters always want to fight. And if you're going to tell a guy you're going to put him in, like, the sales department or he's going to do appearances for the UFC, he's going to have a hard time with it, just like Liddell's having right now. I mean.
No, I ran into Liddell at the Madame Tussauds, the wax sculpture. By the way, that wax sculpture, ridiculous. It would ridiculous how amazing and intricate this thing actually was. Even Liddell, when I was interviewing Liddell, because the wax sculpture was in between us both, I was just like, Chuck, this thing's nuts. He's like, this is surreal, man. My friends told, because some of his friends saw it beforehand, and they were like, it's crazy. And when you see this thing, it's like all you're doing is you're staring at its chest to see if it starts breathing. It was crazy. And then, I'm not sure if you saw the rest of the, you haven't seen the rollout from the show where I go and I interview Elvis Presley, Obama. I go and interview Jenna Jameson and Hugh Hefner and Brad Pitt. And some of these sculptures, wax sculptures, are amazing. So anyways, Chuck Liddell having a problem. I hope he doesn't fight again. He wants Tito Ortiz. I hope they don't fight again. He's saying the MRIs that he's getting back and the results, everything is fine. Hopefully he never fights again. But if he does, it'll probably be Tito Ortiz. And I think Tito will win. People get upset at me about that again. Regardless, moving forward. George Sotiropoulos. I missed the boat on this guy completely. I picked Kurt Pellegrino to win. I had no, because based on George Sotiropoulos at the weigh-ins, he looked absolutely terrible walking up the stairs. Looked brutal weighing in and stepping off the stage, looked like an elderly man with his chest caved in. It was a very disturbing scene. But when this guy steps into the octagon, wow. I had no idea he was going to beat the Batman like that.
Oh, and I called Sotiropoulos winning this fight just because of how good he looked against Stevenson. I mean, his only losses are against Aoki and Kyle Noak. And Kyle Noak is about 2 weight classes higher than he is. And Sotiropoulos always looks terrible at the weigh-ins. I mean, he has one of the weirdest-looking bodies when he dehydrates himself. But the guy's got skills. He's grappled on the highest level in no-gi at Abu Dhabi. I mean, as has Pellegrino. But that's why I was so excited to see this fight. I wanted to see the two of them mix it up. And they mixed it up. It was a really good fight. And, you know, I don't think Pellegrino should retire like he was talking about.
He's not. I asked him again. He wouldn't give me a response. I talked to a few sources. They said, yes, he's going to retire, but he wants a big fight in December sometimes. That might be his going away fight, which kind of makes me nervous because your foot's halfway out the door. But, you know, he's embarrassed by the loss. That's the
but
problem.
I don't think he should be, because Pellegrino and Sotiropoulos are obviously two of the top guys in the 155 division anywhere in any company.
Yeah, he's awesome. Pellegrino's awesome, dude.
And I really think this should start the talk of Sotiropoulos getting a title shot. If not, I don't think...
I want to see him fight Evan
right
Dunham
away.
Next.
Oh, that would have been amazing.
Unfortunately. Well, not unfortunately. But Evan Dunham's taking on Sean Sherk.
They signed a great fight in Sherk.
We'll get into those matchups probably a little bit later on, because you and I were salivating when we got the news today. It's crazy.
I'm super excited about
Brendan
that.
Schaub takes out Chris Tuchscher in 67 seconds. Tuchscher is a training partner of Brock Lesnar. I think the UFC is going to pit Brendan Schaub versus John Matson next, who also fought on the undercard, taking on Carlos Vimola in a 3-round... I wouldn't say snore fest, because they were both trying to do the best they could. It just wasn't an exciting fight. I think the UFC is going to pit Schaub against Matson next.
And it'd be the smart thing to do. I mean, Schaub beat him on the show. Matson doesn't have the most exciting fights. He's kind of like a straight-up wrestler. So, I mean, you know, they're trying to build Schaub. He's got the big name coming off of the Ultimate Fighter 10, which was one of their highest-rated Ultimate Fighters. And, you know, their heavyweight division is building. So, I mean, they got to build these stars up. You know, Schwab's a good-looking kid. He's in good shape. He's working with a good team. So getting a win over Madsen, you know, or matching
him. He's a good guy. He's just an overall good guy. Same thing with Kurt Pellegrino, by the way, who gave me a bit of, you know, I've got to watch what I'm saying here, a bit of heck. Can I say that? Because I didn't say hi to him when I was supposed to say hi to him because he was coming out of the buffet restaurant a couple days earlier before cutting the weigh-ins. He's probably just having egg whites and stuff like that. But I didn't say hi to him, and I said, I want to say hi to you, but it looked like you were upset. So he Twittered the message, and I got in trouble for that.
I actually read on Kurt Pellegrino's Twitter after the fight was over. I guess he went to that buffet again, and he said he was like 171 by the time he got back to his hotel room.
No ifs, ands, or buts. All right, Ricardo Romero took a bit of a beating by Seth Petruzzelli, but he's able to pull it off, straight armbar. Good job for him.
And I picked Petruzzelli in this fight, and
sucker,
he had lots of opportunities in that first round to finish this fight. Yeah. I mean, it was only Petruzzelli's problem, or his lack of finishing in that fight that he didn't win there. You know, it was his fight to lose, in my opinion, because Petruzzelli, I think a lot of people underrate him. I don't think he fights as smart as he could, but this guy punches hard. I mean, he fought in a K-1 fight against Bob Sapp, and knocked him down, and then his shoulder separated, and he lost because his shoulder was separated. So, I mean, he hits hard.
And he's a good character.
Everyone
loves Seth Petruzzelli. You don't like Seth Petruzzelli? Come on, man. He's awesome.
And he knocked Kimbo out, moving backwards with,
a jab.
A jab. I mean, this guy hits hard. I mean, he could have won this fight. I hope the UFC gives him another chance. We'll just have to see what happens with that.
Kendall Grove takes out Goran Relcic. It was a split decision. Not where I was seated. I didn't see a split decision. I saw a unanimous decision for Kendall Grove. What did you think?
I thought Kendall Grove, I think he did enough to win a unanimous decision. Yeah. I think, you know, we were talking about this on the way up here with Evan Dunham in the Tyson Griffin fight. Sometimes I don't know exactly what these judges are talking about. I don't know how anyone could score that fight for Tyson Griffin. So, I mean, anything can go on with any fight, really, especially if it's not.
And what was my response?
we should expect this from the judges because they don't.
My response to you was yes, Tyler. You know why these judges are scoring these fights, because they don't know about mixed martial arts. A lot of them have never trained a day in their life or even been to a gym or understand what's happening on the ground. They have no concept of what mixed martial arts is other than striking and boxing.
And it's interesting with that, going back to the Lieben and Akiyama fight, Lieben was really, really active on the ground. He was throwing, they're not heavy punches, but he's throwing punches where Akiyama is just leaning forward and putting his weight forward.
I score that for Lieben.
But, you know, judges would see Akiyama
on top.
And going into that third round, I was thinking that Akiyama was probably going to pull off that decision.
That's what he was trying.
You know what? I mean, who knows if it would have turned out that way because Lieben finished it. But, you know, I think the judges really need to start educating themselves on the ground game.
All right, we got to move away from this UFC real quick. Gerald Harris, KO slam versus Dave Branch. Sick or what?
It was amazing. And you know what? I don't think Dave Branch looked bad in that fight. He looked really good. I hope this guy sticks around. But yeah, it almost looked like Gerald Harris had no answer to anything Dave Branch was doing. And then boom.
Boom. All right. Before we get to the whole Fedor stuff, real quick, Dream 15 is going down July 10th, early in the morning. Make sure you check it out. Shinya Aoki taking out Tetsuya Kawajiri for the lightweight title. I'm picking Kawajiri.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Kawajiri as well. I think it'll be kind of similar to what happened with Sakurai. I think he's just going to maul and brawl him and knock out Aoki. There's a couple other interesting matches on the
Light Heavyweight Grand Prix, two fights. Melvin Manhoef taking on Tetsuya Mizuno. Manhoef.
Manhoef for sure.
Geirgard Musasi versus Jake O'Brien. Musasi.
I'm going to go Musasi as well.
Jay-Z versus Kikuno. This is a tough one for me.
This is the fight I was going to say is one of the interesting ones.
I'm going Kikuno.
I'm going to go JC.
All right. And of course, everyone's favorite, Omigawa, taking on Young Sam Jung, who's going to put up a good fight. I just don't think he's going to be able to pull this off. I think Omigawa is going to, again, surprise everyone and pull off some sort of crazy victory that, whether it's come from behind or he pressures him into tapping this guy up. I think Omigawa is going to pull this off.
Yeah, Omigawa is really starting to put his game together in the past few years. I mean, he's the top of the food chain in that weight division, so I think Omigawa is going to win.
All right. Brett Rogers, Fedor Emelianenko. Fedor Emelianenko smashes Brett Rogers. Strikeforce rewards Brett Rogers with a title fight versus Alistair Overeem. Mm-hmm. Everybody said, what? What is happening here? Alistair Overeem goes in and smashes Brett Rogers. People want to see the Fedor fight. Fedor signs on to take on Fabricio Werdum. Everyone thought, you know, Fedor's going to get past Werdum. Then he fights Alistair Overeem for the very last fight of his contract. Couple of problems with this scenario. Problem number one, Verdum triangles and submits Fedor Emelianenko. Fedor Emelianenko still has one fight left on his contract. They want the Verdum rematch. Verdum wants the rematch with Fedor Emelianenko. Strikeforce is like, uh-uh. You're getting a title shot. Everyone's thinking, why in goodness sake would they do that? Because what happens is this. If they don't give Fedor that title shot, Fedor rematches Verdum. He beats Verdum. He's now a free agent. Potentially will go to the UFC. They get him to fight Overeem. He re-signs the contract, whether it's still a champion's clause or not. If he signs with the champion's clause, he's now stuck with Strikeforce, and he is their biggest asset to get ratings that they must deliver to network television. So from a business perspective, it makes sense. From a matchmaking perspective, it is absolutely crazy. If you're Strikeforce, what are you going to do? You got about 20 seconds.
If I was Strikeforce, I'd match Verdum up with Overeem. You have to keep legitimacy above business. I mean, Dana White's going to come out and he's going to blast them for that. Dana White has way more media paying attention to what he says. And then I would match Fedor up with Bigfoot. I mean, if he loses to Bigfoot, you're building another star. And if he beats Bigfoot, he doesn't have your title, and he can leave the company, and it's not too much of a problem.
I'd make Fedor wait to fight the winner of Overeem Verdum, even though he's coming off a loss, and hope, well, you'd think it's Verdum. Either way,
a solution would even put Fedor, Bigfoot on the same card as Verdum and Overeem. Then you have them already primed at the same time. You have Fedor on the card to get your ratings, and then... after, you know, whoever wins, you can have a stare down right in the ring and set up the next match. So, I mean, that could be a possible solution.
Sort of common sense right here in the Showdown. Thank you to everyone for listening. Tyler, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Showdown on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.